Our governor calls Utah the startup capital of the world. And it tracks. We've got a fast-growing, well-educated population and a buzzing economy. And just last week, Utah unveiled the Startup State Initiative, a resource portal for entrepreneurs. From step-by-step guides to a business plan generator, startup.utah.gov is now the first stop for starting or growing a business here. That's startup.utah.gov. Here's what Salt Lake's talking about. Welcome to part two in our series of the most powerful Salt Lakers you've never heard of. In part one, we covered Judge Andrew Stone, Natalie Gochner, the Starks brothers, and Cindy Gus Jensen, all people you should know. Today, we are looking not just at some new individuals, but also at the organizations pulling the strings in our city. Because you know what they say. Behind every powerful man is the Utah Association of Realtors. It's Thursday, April 25th. I'm Allie Vallarta, and this is CityCast Salt Lake. Okay, executive producer Emily Means, we are back in part two of the most powerful Salt Lakers you don't know. Cue the thunder. Welcome.
Thank you very much for having me.
If you haven't listened to part one yet, we linked it in the episode description. You simply must. Today, we're going to focus on four more people or institutions. But as a little warm up, I want to ask you, based on the research you've done, what we've already talked about, what we're about to talk about, is the thesis of this series just that money is power, or is there something more here?
I don't think that you can assign that to everyone we've talked about. You know, we've talked about some real civil servants. We've also talked about people who were just in the right place at the right time. But for some of these people and institutions we're going to talk about today, I actually do think that is the case. And to go even further, it's about the connections you make, probably by having that money.
Not everyone can turn the story by being an Arctic fox. Sometimes you have to write a check. Okay. Well, check is a perfect segue because I would like to start today with Scott Anderson. A. Scott Anderson. Salt Lake City born and raised, 33-year CEO of Zions Bank. Heard of him?
I have. Although, let's be clear, it's not like a Scott Anderson. It's a period Scott Anderson.
And I have something really exciting to tell you, Emily. And I feel like maybe this is just exciting for us, you and I. But, you know, despite being called the shadow governor of Utah, nobody could tell me what the A stands for in A Scott Anderson. But one person could.
Really?
And it is Alden. A-L-D-O-N, Alden Scott Anderson. And I was able to figure out why he goes by A. Scott Anderson instead of Alden. And that's because Alden was his father. And his father was an elected district attorney and a federal judge in Utah. He also, incidentally, wrote for the Crony when he was a student at the U. So A period is a way of honoring the fact that he's a junior without having to take dad's name.
Makes sense. Yeah. Okay. Mm-hmm. I'm so glad you cleared that up because I was going to go on living thinking it was Anderson Scott Anderson for the rest of my life.
Yeah. Okay. So Scott Anderson is someone I think is really interesting because basically he's like the majority whip of the statewide business community. Like,
wow.
This is, right? Don't you think? This is the person you ask kind of permission to run for office. If he gets behind an idea, everyone's going to kind of get behind an idea. Yeah, he happens to be president of like our foremost and very formative and formidable financial institution. But I also think his whole career has been marked by kind of walking this like personal, political, when am I me, when am I repping the bank line. And like with anyone who has a lot of power, that line just becomes almost a figment of your imagination in my, like, it just becomes more of a personal exercise than like a real thing. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. Well, I'm curious, are you going to tell me who called him the shadow governor of the state? Because like, that's, I think that probably says everything you need to know about this man and the way that he's influenced our lives and gotten people in line.
Yeah. I mean, he has been called Utah's unelected governor by the Salt Lake Tribune, the paper of record in our state, that he also was like kind of on the steering committee for. He was a board member. He helped guide their transition into being a nonprofit. But I think this whole, like, is he a shadow governor thing comes more from the idea that he really leads the business community. Mm-hmm. And he's a convener in a way that governors often are. Like, governors are often hosting, like, roundtables and, you know, getting people in line with an idea and determining a good use of funding. And I think, like, those are places where Scott Anderson has had a lot of influence.
Right.
We should say, for anyone who's new to Utah, what is Zions Bank? It is the 150-year-old banking institution in this state. And funny enough, Emily, the bank turned 150 last year, and they commemorated that with this, like, history book, this very thick hardcover history book that outlines the entire history of the bank. But basically, in July of 1873, Brigham Young himself called a group of 12 to his office, which was between the Beehive House and the Lion House, like right here in downtown Salt Lake on South Temple and State Street, and was like, I think that we need a bank. Like, we pioneers need somewhere to put our money. We have this great distrust in the federal government, which keeps kind of trying to kill us. And so by August 6th, they were incorporated. And that is the founding of Zions Bank. So
it's the church's bank. I mean, the most powerful institution in our state, the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, it's the church's bank.
Ostensibly, yeah.
Which I think speaks to part of Scott Anderson's power. You know, you mentioned him as a convener. I think also he is a convener because he has this tie to the church. And that's the case for a lot of leaders in our state. Like, these conversations among power players, they're not just happening in their place of work. They're also happening in their place of worship, right? And that's how they meet each other and connect. And so Scott Anderson being the head of Zions Bank, the church's bank, gives him a lot of gravity in any situation.
Yeah. And the church also heralds economic success and economic decision making as something valuable in the community. And so to be the head of the church's bank is very respectable, right? Yeah. I do have to read you. So the Salt Lake Tribune did this piece on him a while ago, like about 10 years ago. And, you know, it's, of course, like, they ask Scott Anderson, how do you feel about being called basically the shadow governor? And he's very like, who, me? Like, what? Which is so Utah, right?
Yeah.
But there's this quote from Frank Pignanelli, who is a very prominent lobbyist and also kind of pundit in our state, and not a lobbyist registered to represent Zions Bank, which is why they could get a quote from him. And he said, it is almost like the man doesn't have an ego. I think that gives him a lot of credibility. And I was like, sure, Jan. Okay. The CEO of the biggest bank, like the someone that they call the shadow governor, someone who has called for decades various Republican leaders into his office with polling he funded, personally funded, to try and convince them to run against Mike Lee.
Yeah.
Is egoless? I don't think so.
Well, listen, he doesn't need to inflate his ego. His power is obvious. Like,
yeah, we do it for him. We're doing it right now. Him. Yeah. So I think, like, to this idea of, you know, where are powerful decisions being made? Like, Scott Anderson knows how many Zions Bank employees participated in Republican or Democratic caucuses and how many were elected delegates, because political participation is like part of the work culture, and they actually track it as a way of measuring the bank's involvement in the community. So like, I think I have to say, like, I do think he just, like, really believes in democracy, and that is where he has found a lot of his, like, interest in being influential in this way. But I feel like I did this with Judge Andrew Stone last week, too. He's retiring. Yeah. I got to tell you, he's retiring.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's also partially why we're talking about him now, because we're kind of reflecting on his impact. I'm curious how engaged he'll be after he fades into the sunset, or if he will at all.
I have big feelings about this, because he's retiring as the bank's CEO. Their current CFO is going to be the new CEO. But there can only be one Scott Anderson in a room, right? And it's like, for fans of Succession, I feel like it's like if Logan made Kendall CEO but stayed board chair. Mm. Like, is Kendall really CEO? You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, it could have never worked that way. I do want to say something I dug up that made me feel, honestly, like almost a little emotional when I was thinking about, like, why you would want to retire now if you're Scott Anderson. We know that fintech is one of the governor's Office of Economic Opportunity's, like, big priorities for the state right now for our economy. And I think, like, after Silicon Valley Bank collapsed, like, Zions stock kind of, like, plummeted for a minute. Like, it was scary. And I think, like, banking is changing. And if you're Scott Anderson, you really acknowledge that, like, tech is in banking in the future a lot. And maybe that's not your bag. But I also think Utah politics has really changed. Hmm. Scott Anderson wrote this op-ed in the Deseret News in 2020, and it was heralding Utah's 2020 Compact on Racial Equity, Diversity, and Inclusion, which was a Gary Herbert joint, former Governor Gary Herbert joint. And I just, like, here's this line from Scott Anderson. "My hope is that the compact helps all of us to unify around basic principles of racial equity, diversity, and inclusion, and commit in our own ways to meaningful action, including public policies and listening, engagement, and investment."
And now here we are, four years later, banning books and banning DEI offices in universities.
Right. Like, four months after this was written, we elected our current governor, Spencer Cox, who I think people saw at the time as being a very modern governor. But he is currently, like, taking a victory lap, championing the legislature unplugging the state's DEI offices and touting shutting down diversity, equity, and inclusion programs as a win. And I would just absolutely love, open invitation, Scott Anderson, to come on this show and talk about this, to understand through your eyes how you see yourself in this moment. Is it stepping back, or is it stepping back from the bank to focus more on private, like, the private representation in politics? I don't know.
Maybe. And good thing Scott Anderson is a longtime listener of this show. You can email
us, Scott. He's actually a member.
Well, Allie, I want to now talk about someone else who has served as a majority whip, someone who's gotten people in line in this state, and that is Stuart Adams, who is not the majority whip at this time of the Utah Senate, but actually the Senate president. And can I tell you a fun anecdote about Stuart Adams?
Please.
A fun personal anecdote. One time I was interviewing Stuart Adams, and he and I are both from Layton in Davis County. And we were just kind of like, I don't know, shooting the shit before the interview started.
I'm sure you would describe it exactly like
Exactly like that. And I was like, so you're from Layton? That's where I grew up. And he said, oh, whereabouts? And I told him whereabouts. And he said, oh, that's the LaDonna Mesa ward. Like, he knew what the LDS ward was where my neighborhood is. And that is how powerful Stuart Adams is. He knows the entire state, probably, like, really the entirety of Davis County only, like, down to the ward boundaries. So
that's his version of zoning.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. So who is Stuart Adams? President of the Utah Senate. Before that, he was a representative in the legislature. He's been there a really long time, more than 20 years. And as president of the Senate, He's the guy. He sets the legislature's priorities. We talk about him a lot during the legislative session. He's also a real estate guy, Allie. You won't be surprised to learn that, I'm sure, because a lot of our state's political leaders have ties to real estate in one way or another. Oh, yeah. And even though he's from Layton, I wanted to talk about him today because he's done a lot to impact our lives here in Salt Lake and throughout the state.
Educate me.
What I think Stuart Adams would point to as maybe one of his biggest achievements is cutting your income taxes for the past 4 years. He is so thrilled about this every year to announce it as the year of the tax cut yet again and yet again and yet again. And if you're a regular person, like you're not a super wealthy Utahan, Stuart Adams probably saved you like around $50 with this year's tax cut. So, you know, he'd call that a win. Maybe you don't call it a win, though.
I think you and I saved like $5.20 or something like that.
Roundabouts that. Other things he's involved in where he wields his power is the Military Installation Development Authority. This is often, I'll lay it out for you.
MIDA.
Yes, it's referred to as MIDA. And it's a state entity that kind of pretends to be an elected government for the sake of supporting economic development projects. So usually in the process, they're taking away a city's land use and taxing authority. This is happening right now in Wasatch County, where they're developing a luxury resort for the sake of the state's economic development, quote unquote. Yes. And one reason I wanted to mention his role as chair of MIDA is that we're seeing something kind of similar play out here in Salt Lake with the Fair Park District Board. So this is an unelected board that will oversee the economic development of the area surrounding what will hopefully someday maybe be a Major League Baseball stadium on the west side. And this board looks a lot like MIDA in that it does have that land use and taxing authority in the project area.
I mean, Stuart Adams was also one of the legislators that was in Ryan Smith's suite Delta Center at a jazz game, as reported by Jazz Beat reporter Andy Larson, like right before he got that sweet, sweet bill passed to give him 10 blocks downtown to revitalize and build a stadium in. So,
yes, ma'am.
Does he like sports or does he just like being in the room?
I think what he likes is making money. I gotta be honest. Allie, I'm really glad that you mentioned that because remember, it was a Senate bill that created this downtown zone. I know it's gotten confusing. We're talking about all these different sports zones or whatever, but this was a Senate bill. And like I said, Stuart Adams, the Senate president, he sets the agenda for his chamber. So those are some of the ways that he's impacted your life. And for better or worse, I think we'll see Stuart Adams's influence play out in our state for a very long time with the way downtown shakes out and in a variety of other ways as well. I wanted to talk about where his power lies, though.
I'm sorry. I'm just laughing out loud because I am sitting here hearing you talk about Stuart Adams, and I'm like, I'm so red-pilled by hosting this show that I was trying to think who's the federal version of Stuart Adams, and I couldn't remember. And it's obviously Chuck Schumer, but I was like, who, what, like DC what? And I'm like, wow, we're in the soup here in Salt Lake City.
We're in the soup. And more so, you know, I'd probably say it's more so Mitch McConnell. And part of that is because Stuart Adams was also the chair of the American Legislative Exchange Council, I think just a few years back. ALEC. It's a conservative think tank that basically writes legislation for state governments to sponsor and enact. And
messaging bills, usually. Yes. The things that we get that are really controversial and you're like, I don't know, is this a priority? ALEC probably wrote it and handed it off.
Exactly. So he's got connections to Republican leaders nationally. I think that's a lot of where his power lies as well. And Allie, I think you would agree with me on this. I think he's more powerful than the governor, especially in partnership with the House Speaker. They can basically do whatever they want. And, you know, they can override governor's vetoes if they get everybody to fall in line, which they usually do. So That's why you should know who Stuart Adams is.
Yeah, I mean, when I even just think about, like, we were just talking about the Utah Diversity, Equity, and Inclusion Compact that Gary Herbert's office was excited about. Mm-hmm. His lieutenant governor at that time was current Governor Cox. I have to imagine that current Governor Cox at that time thought that Utah's Diversity, Equity, and Inclusion Compact was pretty great, especially if it had signatories like Scott Anderson. He is now, years later, as the governor, on a road trip, basically, celebrating the success of ending diversity, equity, and inclusion programs, which is legislation that is enthusiastically endorsed by, if not written by, Alec. So it's like we've even seen like whole personality shifts mm-hmm. because potentially of someone like Stuart Adams inviting an idea into the legislature and saying, this is the agenda, this is the new vision.
You've connected the dots, my friend.
I'm Charlie Day. Yeah. Mother's Day is on the horizon, and the good news is that you can find everything you need at Harmon's. Whether it's a little something to brighten Mom's Day or a memorable spread, here are a few ideas. For breakfast, try Harmon's house-baked cinnamon rolls with freshly squeezed orange juice and a package of fresh-cut strawberries. If you're spicing it up with Bloody Marys, don't forget that Harmon's has an olive bar with over 12 different varieties. Now, flowers are the perennial favorite, and you can order online or pop by the store last minute, shop succulents, potted plants, and elaborate arrangements. May's flower of the month is the hydrangea, very appropriate. Hydrangeas are fragrant and elegant. And if sweets are in order, Harmon's has added raspberry to their selection of brownie flavors. Find all mom's favorites at your local Harmon's or order online at harmonsgrocery.com. Epic Brewing is one of the OGs in building Utah's craft beer scene. But I am most excited about their recent adventures in canned cocktails. First, they released the Utah Mule. And as a big fan of ginger, I have been sipping those for almost a year now. But now, this April, we have the Utah Margarita, a delicious, locally fermented blend of real lime and agave. And they create alcohol by fermenting cane sugar instead of using tequila, which means you can buy Utah Margaritas at the grocery store. Pick up a six-pack of Epic Brewing's Utah Margarita or Utah Mule at any local Harmon's or Trader Joe's. Or you can visit Epic Brewery on State Street in downtown Salt Lake City. They're open 7 days a week. And this fall, look out for the Utah Cosmo. All right, Emily, do you know where the commercial club is?
No. I'm not invited.
I went to a wedding there once. It is really cute inside. It's that venue on Exchange Place next to Twist that you like will occasionally see people go in and out of, and it goes to this upstairs like event space. Anyway, on April 24th in 1920, 50 real estate, at the time they were called dealers, from across Utah gathered in that room at the Commercial Club in Salt Lake City to form the Utah State Realty Association.
Oh.
Now they have just under 20,000 members, and baby, they are the Utah Association of Realtors.
Okay, wait, Allie. So this isn't just one person we're talking about here with power.
No, this is about a little under 20,000 people with power. And their power is so interesting because it's like, you know, it's a trade association. It's one of the largest ones in the state. But it's also the state chapter, essentially, of the National Association of Realtors, which is the largest trade organization in the nation. And then the Utah Association of Realtors has, like, their mini chapters. So they've got, like, boards and, like, city chapters. Mm-hmm. And they're all kind of connected to each other. And the big through line I discovered, which was kind of a light bulb moment for me, between the Utah Association of Realtors, the National Association of Realtors, and all the other boards and chapters, is the word realtor, which is trademarked.
What?
Do you know this?
No, it's not.
Yes,
you
that's
can't
why
just
it's always
trademark
written
professions?
Yes, you can. So that's why it's always written in all caps often. Huh? And it has the little like R. The term realtor is a registered trademark that identifies a real estate professional as a member of the National Association of Realtors, who subscribes to their like code of ethics. What? So like, if we're talking about power, they own the word.
Can't say that about doctors. Can't say that about educators.
No. Though I will say now what I really want to do is every time I type the word realtor, I just want to write it in all caps with the little trademarks. Okay. So how does the Utah Association of Realtors influence the lives of non-realtors and even non-homeowners like you and I? The answer, of course, is lobbying and political influence.
Mm.
I read this piece in the Deseret News that was written a while ago, and it had this quote from someone named Chris Kyler, who was the CEO of the Utah Association of Realtors back in the day. And he said what he wanted to do was build the best and biggest political action committee in Utah. And
well,
I think he did.
He did it. He did it.
I think he did. Because if we take a quick look at Governor Spencer Cox's 2020 fundraising efforts, he has two massive checks. The largest donation he received was from the Republican Governors Association. Makes sense, right? That was $200,000. The second largest donation he received was from the Utah Association of Realtors Political Action Committee, which was $125,000.
Wow. He's not even...
To one man.
He's not in real estate. I mean, like... Or I don't think he is, anyway. He's in telecommunications and farming.
He's in farming. Yeah, I guess that's kind of real estate.
I guess
if you...
So.
Ag. It's all real estate,
it's
Emily.
All
that's
real
the problem.
Estate, baby.
That's the problem.
I mean, think about it. Think about how many legislators have connections to the real estate industry in the state.
Former Governor Gary Herbert was the former president of the Utah Association of Realtors.
From Mark and Fark.
From Mark and Fark. I was Googling around to see which candidates they had supported recently. And I found this really weird thing. So if you go to erinmendenhall.com, you get our current mayor, Erin Mendenhall's like campaign website. But if you go to erinmendenhall4mayor.com, it brings up this like almost complete duplicate campaign website. Same colors, what? Same information, similar photos. But you scroll down to the bottom and it says paid for by the Salt Lake Board of Realtors. And I was like, what?
How did you discover that?
I don't know.
You were really down in the rabbit hole, huh?
The same way I can find anyone's ex-boyfriend. You know what I mean? Like, it just is what it is. So, I mean, the Utah Association of Realtors, yeah, in short, like, they're writing checks to candidates. And I myself have worked for candidates before who have been, like, shivering in their boots because they're running against someone who's endorsed by the Utah Association of Realtors.
Right.
Like, they really have a lot of money and a lot of influence in that way. They also have legislative influence. They often testify around housing bills at the Capitol or bills related to private property, protecting private property. They put out a really slick pro-accessory dwelling unit video recently that's on their advocacy page under legislative issues, which I think is interesting because that ended up being sort of like a council issue. But it was actually posted 3 years ago. So like they've been all in on ADUs are a free market solution to our affordable housing crisis before that fight was making its way to the Salt Lake City Council.
Yeah.
And at the same time, all this shit going down with the National Association of Realtors, the lawsuit, the $418 million settlement that they just filed, the DOJ getting involved with the National Association of Realtors, like, I think that is ultimately more like a professional organization not looking out for its people and kind of throwing a lot of day-to-day realtors under the bus to keep itself from going bankrupt. Like, so in terms of like the Utah chapter and what the future is like for them, I am interested to see how this like national news could impact things, because like if the vibe is realtor associations aren't doing much for us, they're not doing much good for us, then yeah, if they start endorsing candidates, maybe that could land differently on you, right? But it will be really interesting to see, like, this summer as the dust settles nationally, how that trickles down. I don't think it's going to impact our housing market much, but in terms of the way that this organization operates and its influence and how it thinks about advocacy, we'll see.
Yeah. Yeah. It does feel like it's so entrenched in our legislature and in different spheres of influence that maybe no impact, who knows? But I don't know. This is our business here in Utah. It's real estate, baby.
I mean, 20,000 people are a member of the Utah Association of Realtors. Salt Lake City's population is about 200,000. So that's what?
A 10%?
20,000 divided by 200,000. 1%.
1%?
Yeah. So that's like, if you imagine 1% of Salt Lake City as a member of this association, it's kind of a lot. Like, if 1% of Salt Lake City decided to do anything, that's kind of a lot of us.
Yeah. Like, vote? No.
That's about what our turnout is, right?
Yeah. Well, Allie, mind if I bring us home?
Bring us home.
You laid it out where the power is in the legislative influence, the political influence, and boy, do I have an organization to share with you that has just that. You and I have been talking about billboards. Salt Lake's been talking about billboards a lot recently and development bumping into billboards. Let me introduce you to Reagan Outdoor Advertising, the state's biggest outdoor advertiser.
Dewey Reagan.
Dewey Reagan.
Powerful man.
Yes, yes. So let me give you a little bit of their history. They've got a really slick layout on their website because they're very proud of being a born and bred Utah company. So their origins are in 1965 here in Salt Lake City. A young, energetic William Reagan Sr. saw an opportunity to help customers get the most out of their advertising dollar. So he put up one sign outside of a Ramada Inn, and the rest is history.
Outside of a Ramada Inn?
Outside of a Ramada Inn. I can't tell you which Ramada Inn, but that's where it all began.
Years later, Chiggy would write Holiday Inn, and that's amazing.
Yeah, yeah. Pitbull at the Hotel Motel Ramada Inn. Is that how it goes? No.
Yeah.
Anyway. We kind of understand generally how Reagan Outdoor Advertising impacts us because it's visual, right? Like, they impact our view. If you have moved into a luxury apartment between 5th and 6th South in Salt Lake City, you know the influence Reagan has on your life because you can't see the mountains anymore.
Did you know that luxury meant that it came with a billboard?
Oh, that's one of the amenities? Got it. Other ways Reagan Outdoor Advertising impacts you is it limits your city's ability to control what happens in its boundaries. So over the years, Reagan has lobbied the legislature for stronger protections for billboards, making it hard for local government to limit their size. It's also very, very expensive for local governments to remove a billboard. Billboards are considered personal property, so that makes things difficult for cities as well. And the reason they've been able to tip the scales in their favor is because they know the right people in politics and they support those people through cash and in-kind donations, baby.
Yeah. The other thing that I also really enjoy that I think about a lot when I see billboards is the billboard advertising the billboard sales job. Have you seen that one on State Street?
I have. And I almost fall for it. I'm like, oh, yeah, actually, that sounds like a great salary plus commission.
It doesn't really specify. It just says you can make like this much money as a sales executive. And then you have to kind of read on, which is pretty dangerous while you're driving down State Street, to get kind of the details of the job. But it's like, sell this billboard.
Yeah.
And I'm always like, Whoa.
Meta, man.
Do we think this listing is also on Indeed, or is it like only here to prove a point that these work?
Ooh, that's, you know, it sounds like you're the right person for the job, Allie. I mentioned the political donations. The Tribune reports that Reagan Outdoor Advertising has donated more than $2 million to state and city officials since 2008, including $70,000 to Governor Spencer Cox. But I learned this about Reagan, which was really interesting to me because it's incredibly local. They formed a political action committee during the 2015 Salt Lake City mayoral race, Allie. They supported Jackie Biskupski, who did become the mayor. Her opponent at the time was then-mayor Ralph Becker, who is a very vocal critic of the billboard industry. Huh?
Interesting.
Uh-huh.
Uh-huh. Oh, yeah. Didn't his wife found the, what do they call it, Protect Scenic Utah or something?
That's right. His partner, Kate Kopischke, is the head of Scenic Utah. They're one of the big, like, anti-billboard organizations here in the state.
Yeah, see Utah, not billboards.
That's their exactly. They consider billboards visual pollution, and obviously our state has great natural wonders, so why would we block those views? But I was like, oh, okay, you really inserted yourself in our city in that election.
Okay, I want to ask you, Emily, because, like, there are now multiple states that have banned billboards. There is a lot of community, I think, griping happening about billboards. Mm-hmm. It feels like they are in their flop era. Do you think that Reagan Outdoor Advertising's power could be dwindling soon, or are they just gearing up for the fight of their lives?
Well, I mean,
are they not in the fight of their lives, and we're just silly for thinking they are?
We are silly. We are silly because it's not a recent thing for people to be mad about billboards, you know? And again, like, they seem to be so entrenched in our political sphere here in the state that, I don't know, if I'm Stuart Adams, I'm not letting any anti-billboard legislation go through.
Yeah.
So, yeah, maybe we're just silly.
Silly indeed. We're just silly little people trying to understand how this place works.
That's all we can do.
That's all we can do. Okay, what I would like you to do, listener, is let us know who we missed, because in the wave of powerful people you don't know, there are certainly lots of powerful people we don't know. Tell us who they are so that we can become experts on them in a day and tell you more about them. You can call us at 801-203-0137 and leave a voicemail. You can also text that number. Our email is saltlake@citycast.fm. We're on Instagram @citycastslc. We read all our DMs. Who did we miss in this conversation? Anything give you the feelings? And Emily, I'll see you later.
See you later, Allie.
That is all for us today here on CityCast Salt Lake. Thank you for listening. Hey, if you like this show, if you think it's valuable, if you think this information is valuable, I am asking you to become a founding CityCast Salt Lake member. You can do that at membership.citycast.fm. Thank you. And we will be back tomorrow morning with more from around this city.